You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on Cyclesman.com. He's speaking to us from Gulf Shores, Alabama. Happy July 4th, and welcome back to the show.
Jim, thanks for having me. Happy
Tim,
July 4th.
I really appreciate that you're working on the holiday.
No problem.
I guess when you work from home, though, every day's a work day, and if you do it right, every day's a holiday.
Exactly.
Now, the equity markets, gosh, it seems every week we hit new highs. Is this going to continue?
We have, Jim, we have a unique situation here. There's, you know, I've talked about the long-term economic cycles going back to the 1800 and how we're now in this, you know, the current long-term, the sixth long-term economic cycle that's been trying to roll over, and that this sixth cycle was born out of the 2002 low, and how it's been fabricated, if you will, based on monetary policy and, you know, interest rate cuts and debt expansion, et cetera, whereas the other five cycles in history have been based on sound economic a sound economic underpinning, be it, you know, the founding of the country with the railroad boom, or the post-World War II, or the World War II and then post-World War II era, fueling, you know, that cycle, and then that was followed by the tech era. It began in the 80s and into the 90s, coming out of the 74 bear market low. So all of these previous cycles have been fueled by, like I said, a sound economic underpinning. This current cycle began in 2002, and like I said, there's no sound economic underpinning at all. And you look under the hood at the data, it's just literally a house of cards. But it is what it is. I mean, it's held up, and they've continued to do it through debt expansion. If you look at, you know, the top in 2000 coming out of that low, and you can see, and I've done some work with this, you can see where the debt begins to expand. They pushed it into the 2007 top, and everybody's forgotten about this, but it resulted in the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression into the 2009 low. Well, that was the first attempted downturn out of this current cycle. And then the second attempted downturn occurred with the COVID high. And then, you know, of course, coming out of COVID, we saw one of the, or we did not one of, we saw the largest expansion of debt, the most rapid expansion of debt, I should say, in history. So that's fueled us to where we are now. And, you know, the market peaked back, the industrials peaked last December. We saw the decline into the April low. And then that was somewhat fabricated as well, with the removal of, you know, the on-again, off-again tariffs. And with the good news of the tariffs, that low was in place, and then we spring up here, and again, we're seeing an uptick in the expansion of debt, government spending. In the first 6 months of this year, we saw nearly, it was 800, don't hold me to the number because I'm saying this from memory, but it was 800 and somewhere around 30 plus or minus billion dollars, nearly $1 trillion debt expansion in the first 6 months of this year. And so you see that when you look back in history, every time the market gets into a little bit of a vulnerable position, you see that debt expansion accelerate. Richard Russell used to say, inflate or die, and that's literally what they have to do. I mean, the system is the fiat debt-based system is based on inflation and debt expansion, and that's what we've seen. Now, at the same time, we're also seeing this the third attempted downturn out of the current out of the sixth long-term economic cycle trying to take hold. The process with that downturn is certainly 100% without a question, looking at all the checklist and things that you know, check the boxes with the previous downturns, it's happening. we're seeing something a little unique here in that we've seen this advance this strongly out of the April low. Do we make a new high here? I don't know. Maybe, but it doesn't change that we're still, in the process of making or setting up for the third attempted downturn out of this long-term economic cycle. From a Dow theory perspective, we're seeing something potentially very similar to 1999 and the 2000 top. And let me explain. The leading Dow theorist, a lot of your listeners may know who he was, Richard Russell. He was a famous Dow theory guy. And I remember the call. It was September the 23rd, I'm pretty sure of the date, of 1999. He called the primary bearish trend change and looking for that top. Well, the equity markets and, the industrials in particular, they moved down into October. They continued down about a month. And then they put in a bottom, just like we did in April, and then they pressed to a new high. But the primary bearish trend change did not reverse it. It stuck. And without getting into those details, if people don't understand Dow theory, the transports did not confirm that move. So in spite of the new high, the primary bearish trend change was valid, and the warning stood, and it marked the top. And so we saw a primary bearish trend change with the decline into the April low, no doubt about it. And so we may be seeing something akin to that 2000 period. I don't know. Time will tell. But the fact is, we are seeing this longer term setup, and it's just relentless as hell. I'm very surprised that this thing is pushed as far as it has. Maybe it does make a new high, and maybe this lasts a little while longer. But again, to reiterate, we are seeing this setup. But until we get, an intermediate term sell signal, and we start to build some structure here for a turn, this rally, it is what it is. I mean, it's been going on obviously since April, April 7th or 9th, I forget which day at bottom, but one or the other on the industrials, and an intermediate term buy signal followed right after that, and it has not been reversed, and this thing's going to continue up until it is. But like I said, it's within the context of a higher degree setup, and it's it's got everybody just asleep at the wheel. I know we've been talking about this bubble forever, but nothing has changed. Like I said, I see the boxes checked. I see the debt expansion, and that tells us that it's being fought tooth and nail, and it's going to go on here to the next setup takes place. So, or the next setup within the higher degree setup. In other words, what we're looking for is an intermediate term top where a turn can take hold. We have to judge it from there once we get there.
Now, so many people have said, yeah, the market's going along nicely right now, but they're nervous about this fall. Are you?
I don't want to put a time frame on it, but yes. I mean, once we get what's at risk here, and I'll go out on a limb and be super bearish because I am in the long term. Like I said, right now we've had an intermediate term buy signal, and that intermediate term buy signal is still intact. I don't know how the setup is going to you have to read the structure once you see it. But once we get this intermediate term top and you can see what the structure is telling us, and if the downturn, let me say it this way, if we get this intermediate term top, be it this fall, late summer, or whenever, it is going to be an opportunity, the third opportunity for the third attempted downturn out of this sixth long-term economic cycle. And this sixth long-term economic cycle is going to put the entire global financial system at risk. As bearish as that sounds, yes, I'm very nervous about it, but we have to get to this rally out of the April low has to run its course. I don't know when that's going to happen. It's going to happen when I see the structure and an intermediate term sell signal is triggered.
Is gold still a good bet right now?
I'm nervous about all asset classes. Gold is potentially at an intermediate term top. It's trying to make an intermediate term top. This is a critical juncture in that regard. If we have that intermediate term top, which I can't confirm right now, I can just tell you that I have a sketchy intermediate term sell signal, and an intermediate term top is trying to take hold. If that top does in fact bite and gets legs and continue and is not reversed in here, then we have the opportunity here for a higher degree clustering of cycle tops with gold. And then from there, you know, you take it one cycle at a time. But I can see the potential here for a clustering of higher degree tops up to the 9-year cycle top, which would be a substantial top in gold if that takes hold. But right now, like I said, I have a sketchy, in other words, an iffy. It needs to need further confirmation, but I do have an intermediate term sell signal, and we need to see what you know, how the structure with the cycle transpires.
Is silver going to continue its sharp rise?
It's going to follow pretty much in the same footsteps as gold. The cycles are slightly different, but very similar. And so I see it pretty much in the same light as gold.
We'll have more with Tim Cyclesman Wood right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Tim Cyclesman Wood. Tim, what's going on with crude?
Crude has been obviously in also a bounce, a pretty significant bounce coming out of those April lows as well, and we had intermediate degree lows there. I mean, pretty much, well, I can't say pretty much all, but many of the asset classes are moving to a similar cyclical structure. It's not exact, but similar. And with crude oil, we did have an intermediate degree low in April, and we've seen that bounce. You know, it spiked up to nearly $80 in the last week or so. We put in a little bottom, and it's trying to bounce. In a bigger picture, we should have some longer term tops. We should have a 3-year cycle top that is in the next low is not due until next year. So this should be, based on that structure, this should be a counter trend advance that should take crude oil lower. But I cannot say just yet that this intermediate term advance has run its course, because I do not have an intermediate term sell signal as of yet. I'd say any further weakness next week that takes us below, say, about the $64 level. We had such a broad swing that week of the last week of June with all the goings on in the world that it created kind of a broad range that I have to see to trigger a signal. But if we can get below that level, then it's going to trigger an intermediate term sell signal, and that's going to tend to tell me that this rally has run its course. In the meantime, we're just kind of treading water here. But long story short, yes, I think this has been a counter trend bounce.
Now, I just saw a headline, U.S. manufacturing down for the fourth month in a row, and it's blaming tariffs, which were supposed to make American manufacturing come back. Are the tariffs not doing what they were intended to do?
I think they're doing exactly what they were intended to do. You just weren't told what the real intent was.
Oh, what was the real intent?
Well, just like in my mind... I say that somewhat sarcastically. During the Great Depression, the Smoot-Hawley Act, you know, there was, and I'm speaking, it's been a while since I read about that, but I was familiar with it from school, and I looked it up back, you know, in April and March and April when all this tariff nonsense was going on. And, you know, it is known that those tariffs, and I think those tariffs were in the order of 20 or 25%, And then the foreign countries, they reciprocated. And it's known, they say that it exacerbated or contributed to the Great Depression, made the Great Depression worse, however you want to word it. And that's absolutely true. And I think that it should be obvious to anyone that you would get the same result here with the tariffs. And so I was being a little bit sarcastic when I said that I think they're doing exactly what they were intended to do, and I think that it is a detrimental to the economy. And just like you said there, you're seeing signs of that. So that was the angle I was speaking of. But as far as bringing back manufacturing, let's think about that. And I shake my head about this. I mean, tell me how I'm wrong. Maybe this is too much of a simpleton look at things, but damn, sometimes you just got to stand back and look at it with common sense. And here's how I see it. You know, this is supposed to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. Well, let's think about that. So you're the CEO of some company and you have some manufacturing facilities overseas, and you're in charge. You got to make the decision for your company and your shareholders that you're going to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. And it's going to cost you. The cost of land, the cost of the construction. We got to ramp up. You know, the manufacturing facilities with all of our equipment and et cetera, et cetera. And we got to have employees. And we got to train these people. Where are they going to come from? Nobody's trained to do this particular task because we don't have any manufacturing facilities to speak of in this country. And so, you know, this is something that's going to take time. I mean, when they spouted that nonsense out of their mouth, what do they think? They're just going to drop it out of a helicopter with people in it, staff ready to go, just speeding out goods. But then, to make matters worse, you come along and now you put the tariffs on. You take the tariffs off. You put the tariffs on. You reduce the tariffs. You increase the tariffs. I mean, what CEO in his right mind is going to commit to bringing facilities back in that environment? You're going to invest in the company and building the manufacturing facility here to turn around any day and have the whole thing dismissed, and you're going to be left holding that bag? So I think this tariff nonsense has created a lot more uncertainty than anything, and I think you're seeing exactly what should have been expected in those numbers.
Is there anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
I guess that's pretty much it. You know, the thing I'm watching, and people can follow along with obviously a subscription to the letter, that the key thing here is this downturn out of this sixth long-term economic cycle. And it has been one heck of a process to watch. It's been going on for, I can say that the process really began. I mean, we knew we were heading into, you know, a setup for this, but it really began with the rate cutting cycle last September. And it's been going on ever since. We've been in a pause period with rates. That pause period, is not at all uncommon when you get into these downturns. In fact, there was a similar pause, coming out of 19. Now this one is a little longer, but there was a similar pause when they started cutting rates in late 19 and into 20, right before the top in the COVID crash. If you go back in time and you look at 2007, 2008, they'd started cutting rates, and you get into 2008, there was a similar pause with the rate cutting cycle before we finally hit the bottom in 2009. That long pause period occurred in 2008. You go back in time. You know, history is a fascinating thing for anyone that understands and has the wherewithal to go back and look at data. You know, everybody thinks that the fact that they haven't cut again is something other than what it's not. It's just a pause within this rate cutting cycle. You go back and you look at the dot-com top in 2000. You get into late 2001 and into 2002, there was a pause period as we moved into that final low, into that four-year cycle low and the bursting of the dot-com bubble. These pauses are common. And so while this one has been just a little bit longer, than those others. I think it's absolutely normal. It's part of the process. This process is taking forever to unfold, but it's still underway. And so there are some things that I'm watching to tell me, you know, the checklist of things that of when this setup will conclude and, you know, we'll be at risk again for the downturn. And then it's a matter of checking the additional boxes going, yep, we're on the way. You know, like driving down a road and, you know, making sure you're on the right path, on the right track to your destination. We got to get to the next point where we have an intermediate term sell signal and then see if the additional boxes are checked with regard to the downturn out of the long-term economic cycle. And then, like I said, once this thing finally bites, I am not going to back up on this. It is going to be, is going to put the entire fiat debt base, global debt base system at risk. It's going to be, the downturn, I think, is going to be quite spectacular. But we're not quite there yet.
Fed Chair Jerome Powell says if it weren't for tariffs, he would have cut interest rates by now.
Pure propaganda. Pure propaganda. And I can tell, listen, I have a Fed model that it goes back to the 50s with the data. I don't know many people that understand this, but the Fed actually follows the 3-month T-bill yield. And they can influence that 3-month T-bill yield by jawboning. And the marketplace buys the illusion of the Fed, and therefore they can control indirectly that 3-month T-bill yield. They can, but they can only control it for so long, and then the cycle does what the cycle does, and it makes the turn. And if you look back in history, it's just a matter of record. And you look back in history all the way back into the 50s, and I'm looking at the chart now as we speak, historically, in the rate cutting cycles, going back into just as far back as the 80s, that spread differential between the T-bill yield and the 3-month three-month T-bill yield and the discount rate would run somewhere between 1 and 2 points. And there, you know, there's other boxes that had to be checked to put us into the rate cutting cycle. But once the boxes were checked, said, okay, we're in a plateau period, the rate hiking cycle has plateaued, and then you drift from that point, you transition into the rate cutting cycle. And part of going into that rate cutting cycle is, what is the spread on this 3-month T-bill yield versus the discount rate? And historically, it'd run between, like I said, 1 and 2 points. And then there's some rate of change data I look at. There's some different things I look at. And then it would trigger, you'd get the trigger and they'd start to cut. And they would cut, like I said, the important thing here is between 1 and 2 points. Well, then as we move into the post-2009 era, they become even more aggressive with their cutting. Then they start cutting when the T-bill yield is like less than a point, between a point and, let's say, and I don't remember exactly, but say a point to point, 0.7 to 0.8, 0.7 range, they would start to cut. So the cuts in the last rate cutting cycle were much more aggressive than in all the previous cycles back into the 1950s. Fast forward to this current rate cutting cycle that began last September. The spread has narrowed to an even tighter margin. This time it's less, it's running, according to my database, 0.7 to 0.5. I mean, they've cut with the spread as little as a half a point. And so that is the most aggressive cuts in the history of every rate cutting cycle going back into the 1950s. And so to argue that they have not been aggressive here is inaccurate. It's not true. They've been very aggressive here. And the reason they haven't cut is because that spread at the moment is somewhere around a quarter point. And so that's the reason they haven't cut. You know, they're going to, 99% of the news we hear is bullshit. They say, well, they're going to raise or they're not going to raise because of unemployment or employment or because of, you know, the tariffs. No, that's not true. It's the 3-month T-bill yield. And until this 3-month T-bill yield, I was talking about rates having paused. And this is a normal pause. Watch what I'm telling you. I want somebody to write it down. Watch what I'm telling you. When the 3-month T-bill, I don't know if it's going to be a month from now or 6 months from now, but when the 3-month T-bill yield drops to somewhere between that 0.5, 0.7 range, Jerome Powell will cut rates. He's not going to do it until then. If he does, it's going to be an even more aggressive cut than what we have seen since September. And so that model is ironclad. And that's the story with that. So, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with the tariffs. That's just news.
Tim, thank you so much for chatting with us, and enjoy your Independence Day holiday.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on Cyclesman.com. He was speaking to us from Alabama. If you have any questions for Tim or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com and we'll ask that question for you. Find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.